in your brain, you're in the Nerd's Domain. Come on in, it's about to begin.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Nerd's Domain podcast. I'm Matt, and I'm here with John.
Hey.
We're going to be talking about the 5th edition, I'm sorry, the D&D Next, because it's not being called 5th edition.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
It's not being called Next.
It's being called Next according to the invoice from Wizards that I got this order today.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So we're talking about the D&D Next Player's Handbook and the first module called Horde of the Dragon Queen. This is the first part of the Tyranny of Dragons super adventure, I believe.
Yeah. Fight against draconic tyranny in this adventure.
So, 5th edition Player's Handbook.
Yep.
D&D Next Player's Handbook.
Nice. You'll
probably get the tab of that. Broken into three parts.
Okay.
Part one doesn't tell me what it is because it's a jerk.
Not it's all table about content. Character creation.
It's all about it's all creating a character. That's what it's called.
So creating.
So it's got races, classes, personality, background stuff, equipment, customization stuff. And then part two, I'm looking at right now, is called Playing the Game. This is a little bit of the crunchier rules part.
Yep, that's it. That covers.
And then the last bit, I'm pretty sure is just called Magic.
Yeah, how magic.
Because the rules of magic.
So,
part one is like 170 pages. Part two is like 28.
Yeah.
Part three is 88. There are also a couple of appendices, which I actually liked. Conditions was helpful because it's all in one spot.
That's a fourth edition
invention
that they held over.
Gods of the Multiverse is appendix two.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Gods of the Multiverse I liked just because it gave us enough information to write things down.
Yeah.
It's got Forgotten Realms, Greyhawk, Dragonlance, Eberron, which I liked, and then just some standard non-human deities, which are across a lot of stuff anyway. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
And then it has the Celtic, Greek, Egyptian, and Norse deities in it, which I kind of like because
just listed, not a whole lot of information about them.
I didn't
their names.
I didn't know any of the Celtic gods.
Okay.
And then Appendix C is Planes of Existence. I like that. That's helpful. Appendix C. Appendix D gives you some animals, and then that you could summon through the book, which
monsters
means
too, right?
No, I thought it was just animals.
Skeletons and zombies.
Right, but that's because you can summon them.
I see.
It's all stuff that you can use your spells for.
Yeah.
So they put them all in one book.
Sure.
I really like that.
Like, I appreciate what they did and what they included. That's good. But you'll probably hear me say this for a lot of the review. They didn't go quite far enough in that one.
Okay.
Because there isn't a monster manual right now. So 6 weeks before, you're going to get a list of orcs, goblins,
whatever you
want. Those aren't in this book. So the only way to get them is to go download. I can't fully do an adventure based on what's in this book.
Yeah, I know.
That kind of ticks me off because when third edition.
That doesn't bother me because I should have the other two books. Which I think we're on
you
the same
don't
page.
Right now. But
yeah,
you
but
should.
We should have this.
So this
books.
Is that I would call that an oversight, not necessarily a bad thing.
I would call it poor planning of release schedule.
Sure. I dislike that they make you go out and get something else when you pay for this book.
The last appendix is inspirational reading. I actually looked through that list really quick. It's not bad.
Yeah.
It's stuff. Some of it's on there. I would not have ever read before and hadn't heard of.
Sure.
But some of it's like, oh, yeah, this is something everybody should be reading.
Yeah.
The Color of Magic by Terry Pratchett.
Right.
That's a really good one.
Anything Terry Pratchett writes.
Yeah. Cool. Robert E. Howard, so all the Conan stuff. Mm-hmm. That's good stuff. So there's plenty of good suggestions back here. However, it is a page.
Yeah.
And there's and so much more.
But all it tells you is the title and the author. It doesn't tell you
what's interesting about
the book. So.
So let's start at the beginning of the book.
Okay, let's jump back to
races.
Yep.
So they've got 8 races. So
any surprises?
9
there?
Races. 10 races. Hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 races.
Yeah, 5 more.
Here's my problem.
Okay.
Actually, I don't have a problem with this races. I wish there were more. I think they're missing a couple.
I kind of wanted Warforged, Changelings, and Shifters.
I'm not worried about Changelings.
Yeah, I like them.
Warforged are the big one because they're kind of across the board. Shifters,
well,
I'm a little.
Across the board.
Shifters, I'm a little less. Inclined to because this is all Faerun based. I don't know if you noticed that.
I did.
It is. Shifters and Faerun are a very gray area because of the way the gods are made up. But that's okay. I still wouldn't mind seeing those, but the other one I was really wanting to see was an Aesimar.
Oh, yeah. The opposite of the Tiefling.
Yes, because if you're going to put the tiefling in, you should put its opposite in. That's my opinion.
Well, that's the thing. Thing I thought about the races is, except for humans and tieflings, they all have at least two sub-races.
I don't think half-elves get sub-races either.
Oh, that's a good point. Half-elves, I forgot about them. They probably don't.
No, they don't. Yeah. They absolutely don't.
And half-orcs don't either, I guess. So,
okay.
All right, so
four of the nine.
Yeah, anything with human involved doesn't get a sub-race.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but... But at the same time, it's like it feels kind of like they stopped short.
Yeah.
I get Dragonborn don't really have sub-races, but they have types, so that's like a sub-race. So they got like 7 sub-races or whatever.
10.
10
sub-races. 5 of 5.
So
that I didn't care for that. I like the sub-races.
Did you like – okay, yeah, so sub-races, they're good. There's not a whole lot of difference between them. It's kind of an arbitrary choice.
I think it's flavor.
It is.
I think that's a lot of what this book is about.
Right.
So I'm okay with that because it fits the theme of the book.
How did you feel about the separation of common and uncommon races? I thought that was interesting.
I must have missed that part. Honestly.
Yeah. So the base 4 that they put out in the free book, humans, elves, dwarves, and halflings, are the common races. And they are in every Eberron campaign setting. The other races, dragonborn, half-elf, half-orc, tiefling, gnome, are considered uncommon races, and it's said that DMs can not allow those races in their world.
Does it say that here?
It does say it somewhere. So there's a little green box that says uncommon races or something like that. Okay. Start on the Dragonborn page.
You're right. The Dragonborn and the rest of the races in this chapter are uncommon. They don't exist in every world of D&D. That's fair. Like that. I'm okay with, I guess, with the races. I like the sub-races. I like them because it gives that flavor, and it gives more of a background, because there are times when it does matter to the story.
Sure.
Especially in Faerun, where hill dwarves and mountain dwarves are two very different things. In Dragonlance, there's a very distinct line drawn between those two.
Yeah.
And so much so that like they go to war with each other, and it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. So I can get behind that. So classes, it's every class from 3rd edition Player's Handbook, except it added one, the Warlock. I don't think it has a place in the first set. I really don't. I don't think it's
core, a matter of taste.
I don't think it's core to the concepts of D&D.
I think it is. I think it's great.
So let's go through the other 11 classes.
Okay.
Barbarian, which is back. Bard, Cleric, Druid, Fighter, Monk, Paladin, Ranger, Rogue, Sorcerer, Warlock, and Wizard.
Yes.
They look very much like 3rd edition.
They do a lot of 3rd edition.
In fact, I would honestly say that the wizard looks almost exactly like 3rd edition.
There are some
differences, and that's fine. But I'm
well. The magic system has made a not a huge but significant change.
Okay.
We want to talk about that right now.
Yeah, go.
Okay. So with wizards in editions before that, they had a specific term for the magic. A wizard would read a spell book, would memorize a spell, and when he cast it, the spell was gone from his memory. And he would have to wait a whole day until he could prepare spells again before he could cast that spell again. Now, what a wizard does is he prepares his spells. He has a number of spots in his head equal to his intelligence modifier plus his level. And then he has spell slots with which to cast those spells. So if you want to memorize, or prepare rather, 6 first level spells and 1 second level spell, and you have 4 first level spells and 2 second level, or 4 first level slots and 2 second level slots, you can choose to cast your first level spells in your second level slot and still have that first level spell memorized. It's a relatively minor change to the wizard class, but it's significant because it makes you...
I don't know, that's a minor change. I think that is a significant change. I don't think there's anything minor. It changes a very key outlook in the wizard. Let's go back to Barbarian. I'm just going to go in order.
Okay.
So, Barbarian looks very much like 3rd edition.
It is.
I think rages go up higher. Like, you have more rages you can do per day.
Sure.
Especially at 20th level when you have unlimited number of rages.
Right.
You can rage all day for the fun.
Right, but the negative to that, what they took away, is you now have a flat damage bonus when you're raging.
the strip. They feel a little more reckless, a little more barbarian, if you will. They do. Third edition. There's more of a flavor there. Like, you have an unarmored defense. You're trained to use, what, light and medium? Yeah, light armor and medium armor. If you choose not to use them, you still can do that.
Right.
Which I like. That's an option. Which
you need a naked barbarian.
For me, like, you can be Conan now.
Yeah.
And you couldn't do that in third edition.
Not if you want to be optimized.
And I don't know that unarmed defense is optimized, quote unquote,
but it's closer.
Yeah. I like the barbarian the way it feels. Every class has a couple of different options.
They need more, but it's a good start for the first book.
I'm okay with it because it catches all the iconic stuff.
It does. It's a good
baseline.
The thief gets robbed, frankly. The thief has three options. The rogues.
They don't call them thieves anymore.
Well, one of them is thief. The path they can choose is thief.
Thief, assassin, and eldritch or arcane trickster.
Yeah.
I don't like that. No, you're right.
The thief is the iconic robber. He gets bonuses on breaking into second story windows.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, he gets more thiefy stuff. The assassin gets more damagey stuff.
And the arcane trickster gets magic.
Spells, yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's. I'm sorry, I know you're getting...
We're jumping around.
Yeah, bards, I think. I honestly didn't look at bards. I didn't like bards in third edition. But they're all the Dracon all trait kind of thing. They do the inspiration.
What bards bring to the table is they have a class, a feature called inspiration, where they can pass out bonus dice. So that's cool. And in addition, they have healing song, which anytime the party takes a break to heal, they can add a die called Song of Rest. So they have two things, two colleges. One college focuses on magic, yeah. And the other class focuses on fighting.
Yep.
It's an interesting choice. You can be a magic-y bard or a more fighty bard.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun. I like that. It's a good support class.
Yep. So then we go into clerics.
Yep.
Clerics are pretty similar.
Vanilla.
I don't have a problem with that, though, because...
Well, I mean, if you like clerics, you're still going to love clerics. Or, you know, you're still going to like them.
Yeah.
Basically, right now there are seven domains. Each one of them gives you a few extra spells that aren't on the standard cleric spell list. Each one is a little different. And each one gives you a channel divinity power, mm-hmm. A different way to use your turn undead that every cleric gets. And then a few other features. I really like the light one. You basically get the flare spell a certain number of times a day. So basically you can distract them by throwing light in their face. It's kind of fun. So then druids are the same. Well, they're
shape changers. So.
Yeah, they're shape changers. Their paths are
circles.
Well, their circles are more magic or more shape changing.
And they're tied specifically to
terrain types.
Terrain types, there we go.
Arctic, coast, desert, forest, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, you pick a terrain type and you get bonuses in those, extra spells in those.
I think
the wild shape is interesting.
I think it's cleaned up a lot more than the
bird. It is. It's very cleaned up. Because you can turn into technically any animal. And your stats are what they are.
Yeah. So next is Fighter. This is the one I spend the most time with.
Yeah.
Honestly, because...
Probably one of your favorite classes.
Yeah. I wanted to see how they didn't get picked over. Because I kept getting told that, no, don't worry. Because wizards, they get a lot of stuff. But fighters, they get stuff too. And to a point, I think there's some truth there. My problem has always been that fighters have about one option in combat. Any addition outside of fourth. And that is to swing my sword. That's what I do. I'm going to swing my sword this round, next round. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to swing my sword. The fighters have martial archetypes.
Yeah.
Actually, you have a fighting style to begin with, so you can even do archery with this. Yeah. I really like the dueling one, because I can play a pirate now.
Yep.
Or a gentleman fencer.
Yep.
I think if I ever play this, I think that's the way I'm going to want to go.
It's unfortunate that it doesn't give you... the duelist ability is...
Plus two to damage rolls.
Right. So, but it doesn't give you the ability to... be as heavily armored, like the unarmored defense that the barbarian gets.
Yeah,
the fighter doesn't get that. So there are things you could just multi-class one level of barbarian.
It's true.
And gain that, but you know,
or monk,
they get it. So the archetypes are
champion,
which is standard fighter, kind of boring, but
really boring.
you know, not horrible, just it's not what we were looking for that night.
Battlemaster.
That's the one that really, this is what sold me on D&D Next.
Yeah, honestly, you could throw away Champion and keep the other two and I'd be okay with it.
Right, I agree completely.
Battlemaster is going to give you some maneuvers and some superiority dice. So you spend a superiority dice to do a maneuver that you choose. You have a bunch to choose from. You choose three at the beginning.
Two or three.
Three. Okay. It's like,
but yeah, so as you advance in levels, you get more maneuvers, yeah. More superiority die.
I like these. I like the superiority. It gives me something else. I'm going to swing my sword every time. Every round, but this round, I need to knock this guy down. Then let me do that. Or if this round, I decide, well, when he attacked me, I dodged that attack, and then I attack right back. I riposte.
Right. Combat superiority is a good, solid step in that direction. I feel that it's not quite enough because you can only do that four times at the start of your. You get four superiority dice to start with.
Eldritch Knight is the other. Type or martial archetype. It's essentially a sword mage. And I'm okay with that. I like it. I think it fits.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's if you want to be a heavily armored spellcaster, it's one way to go about it.
Monk.
Yep.
Is third edition. It really is. I mean, there's some differences, but I really think it's essentially the same.
Monk has key points, which act very similar to the fighter's combat superiority. As you go along, you get abilities like your Flurry of Blows. You have your normal attack in a round. You spend a key point and activate Flurry of Blows and get two more attacks.
Right.
So that's cool. Then you get Deflect Missile, where you can
spend a key point
to knock a projectile out of the air or catch it if some condition is met, I forget. Yeah. So there's several abilities like that all the way up to the Quivering Palm, which is the Touch of Death.
Yeah,
and you have to spend your key points to do it. It's a lot like the fighter's combat superiority, except there's not as much randomness.
Right.
You know, rolling the die to see what effect, you just get an effect.
Yep.
So it's good.
They have three traditions: the Way of the Open Hand, the Way of the Four Elements, and the Way of the Shadow. Shadow is all about sneaking. Open hand gives you Quivering Palm, and Four Elements gives you
magic.
A little bit of magic. Not magic, but like magic.
Not wizard spells, but the effects not unlike wizard spells.
Paladin. Interesting. Paladin is next. It's third edition Paladin.
Basically. There is something different than fourth edition. Paladins now have to be lawful good again.
And I'm okay with that again.
The classic medieval romance definition of Paladin, it fits. So it's kind of an interesting choice.
They do get some other stuff, like aura protection. It's really nice. It makes it better for them to protect other people. I like that. Gives bonuses to AC.
Yeah.
Or saving throws, I'm sorry. They have a couple of oaths. Is it just two?
No, they have a lot of oaths. It's like demands.
Priests. Yeah, you're right. There's four there.
Yeah.
So those are interesting. I like those well enough. Ranger is
third edition.
Third edition Ranger.
Your choices on that are either Hunter, so you're really good at dishing out damage, or Beastmaster,
and
you have more companion. Opportunity to deal damage.
And you get a Beast Companion because you don't get that with
the Hunter. You don't get that with the Hunter, but the Beast Companion basically is about making extra attacks.
Next is the Rogue. We talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
It's other than the couple of things, like I really don't care that they have an assassin in here.
Then you have the Arcane Trickster, so you can be a rogue that casts spells, so Mage Knight Rogue.
Is okay because again that's still very much old D&D. Sorcerer's Next.
Yep.
It kinda looks a little bit like they took the third edition one and smashed on a couple of options for fourth edition.
A little bit. The other thing is you have sorcery points, which if you turn the page, you'll see a list of meta magic feats from third edition that the sorcerer can add to their spells.
Yep. Which is kind of nice.
Yeah, but it's different because the wizard doesn't have access to these.
Yeah.
Only the sorcerer does. And so it gives them a slightly different feel. You are sculpting magic on the fly, whereas the wizard has prepared and, is a canon. So, anyway.
They have two origins. So there's two sorcerer's origins, Draconic Bloodline and Wild Magic. And then there's a giant page chart of Wild Magic search, and I really hate these. I really hate these. This is too random. 100 or... I'm going to say 50 options, because there's two percentile
per each one. Yeah, so 50 options.
So 50 options, too many.
Let's see.
If it had 20, I'd be a little better with it. Warlock is next. Warlocks are a pack feature. It's going to be very much like
Fourth edition. It is fourth edition.
In a lot of those ways. I'm not saying it's going to be fourth edition rules. It's just those patron, the packs and the patrons that go along.
Yeah. You have when you're a Fey Pack Warlock, you get Misty Step and teleport.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of being able to be tied to Grand Cthulhu and being called a hero. But maybe that's my Masks of Nerlathotep bias speaking out.
But basically what a Warlock does is he casts a small number of spells comparable to the Warlock, or to the Sorcerer rather. And then he gets some extra magic abilities called invocations, which act like other spells or change his spells in a small way.
Well, not comparable to the Warlock at all, or the Sorcerer at all. No, because he can only go up to fifth level spells. It's different. I get what you're saying, but I think...
The slots only go up to fifth level, but you can... But as you go up, you get 1/6, 1/7, 1/8, and 1/9 level spell per... between long rests that you can cast once per long rest, and then pact features change that. Wow. If you multi-class, it changes it as well.
Wizard, we talked about. Yeah, and they have the schools.
Yeah, your features are choose which school you specialize in and get some extra powers.
So chapter 4 is is personality and background. I'm sorry,
you're fine.
Yeah. I'm okay with this for the most part. I think some of it is a little too, like, the backgrounds are really, there's not enough here.
What?
There's only, like, 10.
Okay, so there aren't enough backgrounds.
Yeah.
The material that they present is good.
The material they present is okay. I don't need the random charts. I like to build a character.
Some people need the random charts.
I get that.
So,
we'll move on to chapter 5. It's all equipment.
It's
pretty much the same. I do like the pictures, although we'll talk about the art towards the end. Multi-classing was okay.
There's that picture.
Yeah, I really do like that picture. Feats are okay. You can, if you take the option, you can give up class features.
No. You give up. Or no. It's ability bonuses. Every class gives you, at certain levels, the ability to add +1 to your base abilities. It does it more often than 3rd and 4th edition ever did.
Yeah.
And so that's good.
But there's a ceiling, period. 20 you cannot go above.
Right. So it gives you a reason, like, I don't care about making my 12 strength into a 13.
I want to make my intelligence go from 18 to 20.
Right, that's fine. But then once you've done that, you're like, I have no other bonuses I want.
Yeah.
So you can forego those ability bonuses to then go pick up a feat, which will give you extra tricks.
And then chapter 7 starts part 2.
Yep.
Which is really just how to play the game. It's very much 3rd edition with some differences.
They've kept keywords. That's a big thing. 4th edition introduced, maybe not introduced, but solidified keywords in the D&D vernacular. And D&D Next continues that.
Can you go with keywords and tell me what you mean?
Conditions.
Conditions.
Well, no, I mean, I'm saying like conditions.
I didn't see anything that said keywords.
It doesn't say keywords, but it means keywords. Advantage versus disadvantage, those are keywords.
Okay, sure.
They invoke a rule. So the first few chapters or pages of this chapter are about the individual ability scores and what they're supposed to do. Technically, you don't have skills anymore. You have your abilities, and then you get proficiency in the skill. So you make an ability check with the skill. If you have the proficiency, you add a bonus to it. So there's not a huge list of skills to pick from. You get a few choices based on your class and backgrounds and race. So that's chapter 7 is about abilities. There's not
chapter 7 is also about advantage and disadvantage.
Yes.
That covers a lot of actually the set.
Okay, so we want to talk about advantage and disadvantage.
If you have advantage, and several things can give you advantage.
Yes. You roll 2d20.
2d20 and take the highest number.
If you have disadvantage, you take the lowest number.
Yep.
Roll 2d20 and take the lowest number.
This
is replacing, this is if you're flanking. If the guy you're attacking is prone, if the guy you're attacking is surprised.
If you're in an advantage, in a situation that gives you advantage, I mean, literally, it would be in any situation that you would have an advantage over your opponent, you get that.
It tells you, so then it goes into resting and how to heal up after you've been beat up by the monsters. And then it talks about things to do between adventures, lifestyle expenses, downtime activities, crafting the research.
And
yeah,
that's about it. And then night goes into combat.
Yep.
So, combat's pretty basic.
Yep. You have initiative.
Is there an initiative modifier anymore?
Proficiency.
Seriously?
Yeah, you add your dex bonus, and you might have proficiency or something. Or advantage. You can have advantage on initiative.
So I assume if you have surprise, you have advantage.
Yeah. Well, here, there's a section called surprise. So on your turn, you have effectively three choice. Or on your turn, you have two actions. You can move and do one other thing. Usually it's going to be an attack. You might be casting a spell. But it could be helping somebody out,
dodging,
several other things. In addition to that, you also get a reaction.
So you got a bonus action.
You're not guaranteed a bonus action, but you can get bonus actions. For example, the bard, giving inspiration is a bonus action. So on your turn as a bard, you can stab a goblin and give your fighter buddy inspiration.
Okay.
That's your main action to attack and a bonus action to give inspiration.
Right.
So bonus actions come up and are basically extra full actions, but you don't always get a bonus action. You have to have the right circumstances.
How do you feel about the phrasing for all of this?
So far, so good.
You like action movement?
Yes.
You like it better than standard action move action?
I won't say better. It's one word versus two words. It's a move and an action.
Yeah.
It's a bonus action.
Yeah.
A reaction. Yeah. It's semantics. It's not any different. You can now break up your move and attack halfway through if you want. That's something you can do. But you're going to provoke attacks of opportunity from doing that. Creature size is covered. Flying movement. Basically, if you're flying, you can fly. It doesn't really add anything.
There's a bunch. Don't sign go through all the actions in combat, but there's a bunch.
It's a good system to say, this is what I'm doing. The rules codify it as such. Making attacks, it explains how to make an attack roll. If you played D&D before, skip it. You got it. Here's the more keywords. Damage resistance and damage vulnerability. Damage resistance is if you resist a type of damage, such as fire, if you resist fire, you take half damage from fire. If you're vulnerable, you take double damage. You take an extra 5. So anyway, it's another key word. If you have, resistance vulnerability, it's good. Right. It tells you what happens when you die. Gives you rules on mounted combat, knocking a creature out. Underwater combat is briefly described.
4 paragraphs.
One is only actually a sentence long. But basically it says attacking underwater is hard unless all you're doing is stabbing, because there's a stabbing motion, you're putting all your strength behind a thing.
Yep.
Whereas a swinging motion, you lose a lot of energy in a swing.
Before we get into magic, we're not going to cover this very hard.
We are. There's not a lot to talk about.
It's 88 pages, third of the book. Yep. Here's my issue once again. Spellcasting classes get a very heavy treatment.
Yep.
I don't like that.
So again, we need to look at the Iron Kingdoms for you and see
if the thing is, it's not balanced. It's not balanced across all classes.
I disagree.
Wizards, clerics, bards, sorcerers all have way more choices, way more options for what they can do.
What would you want your fighter to be able to do that compared to a wizard?
Knocking down, pushing back.
So the combat superior guys.
Right.
Which I agree is not enough as it is written. It needs to be increased. I'd start you out with 6 dice.
So combat superiority dice. So as long as I take that one archetype, I'm set.
Yeah, I agree.
That's
like I said, when the playtest came out, that sold me. Because they said, we want to do something like combat superiority for all the classes.
And they did.
They did. They backpedaled.
Monks and them. Fighters, monks and fighters.
Sorcerers might, because they have the meta magic.
Yeah, I guess you can see that.
It's nitpicking at that point.
So all your basic spells are here.
Yeah, all the classics
and all that stuff. I do like that the spells level up. Some of the spells level up. So lots of spells level up like that.
Right. Lots of versatility in your spells.
Not everything does, but a lot of it does.
Not everything does.
So I like that.
But there's two problems with the way they presented the magic here.
Okay.
Some spells can be cast as ritual spells, meaning if you have the feat or the class feature of a ritual spellcaster, you can record that spell in your book and cast it any time you have 10 minutes or more, depending on what spell it is. When you go to look it up, when you go to look up your spells in the list of spells, not the text of spells, where it spells everything out, you have no idea if a spell is a ritual or not.
Right.
Very simple thing to put parentheses R, parentheses, and designate which ones are the ritual spells. As it is, you have to go through and read every single spell entry to figure out which one is a ritual.
To which I would respond, boo-hoo, you're a wizard. You chose to read a lot.
Right, your own but...
I know. For new players,
for it's a terrible thing.
I get that.
The other problem I have is specifically with the wizard spell list. Wizards are the only class that cares about what school a spell belongs to. And again, the wizard spells don't have a designation of what school they belong to in this quick reference list, which is supposed to be for quick reference. So if you're trying to put your spells together, you got to memorize every spell in the book instead of just the ones you know you need. So it's a step that would have saved people a lot of time and a lot of energy that they didn't do. So in the future, wizards, if anybody from that company listens to Wizard of the Coast, listens to this, just add the school. Parentheses T for transmutation. Done.
So let's talk about the book as a whole.
Okay.
It's 300 pages, give or take.
314 with an index.
314 plus character sheets, which I like the character sheets well enough.
It's all right.
So it's 300 pages. It's $50. $49.99. Yeah, it is. Third edition
came out. Hardback.
Third edition came out. 300 pages. $20. So here's my problem with $50. I'm not saying, and I don't want you to think I'm discounting art or artists. There's way too much art in that book for me to pay $50. If I want the rules, give me the rules. I don't need all the pretty pictures. And there are some. There are 8, 9 chapters in there. So there are 8. Full page art pieces, because each chapter gets its full page art.
Probably. I don't remember.
9 full pages. That's 9 pages. Yeah, every chapter. And so there's all this stuff. Each part gets its own full page. There's so much art in this book. If you cut all the art out, you save, I want to say, like 100 pages.
That might be an exaggeration. Because there's no art in the spell chapter.
Would you be okay with 50 pages?
Maybe.
Meet probably, me in the middle of 75, probably. Then, and we'll just call it 75. That's still 75 pages, so I'm paying for 240 pages. I got it. 240 pages of actual text and another 60, 75, whatever, of nothing but art. Why do I need that? Why am I paying $50 and you're not giving me $50 worth of content?
I'm almost there with you. I agree there's too much art in this book. As it is, it takes up a lot of space. But I love art. But the thing about the art is it inspires people.
Chapter six
that gets into multi-classing and feats. And you said to me immediately, this is inspiring me to make a character that looks like that guy. And that's the point of the art. It's to inspire you to have an idea about a character and world that is purely in your imagination and never seen in person.
But for $50 for 300 pages.
Like I said, I'm with you about 50% on that. I agree there's too much art for the price.
Let's look at the stuff that the other stuff that Fate is around 300 pages.
Is it?
Yeah. The book they put out is $24.95. Unless you get it as a PDF, then that's pay what you want.
Right.
Savage Worlds. $10 for the base book.
In print?
Yes.
It's $10 on Hard Drive the RPG.
Yeah. I want to say it's 100.
PDF.
It's
100. Like a hardback.
But it's 100. It's a paperback. $10. They don't do hardback books.
Oh, okay.
It's 110 pages, give or take, I think.
Okay.
$10, 110 pages. Still has art. I'm paid $50 for 300 pages. I really feel like I'm getting couched.
I, like I said, you're not entirely wrong.
The Call of Cthulhu RPG game, which I have the book for somewhere, it's right in front of me. Whole book, everything I need, $34.95. Now, I get it's paperback.
And the art is not as good as the art in the D&D.
No, book. No, but this fits the setting.
Perfect. Some of the pictures are not good in that book.
$34.95, and this has my Player's Handbook, Monster Manual, and DMG all right here.
Sure.
I just
the quality of the book is the quality of the pages, D&D book.
The pages in that are really nice, but they don't have to be that nice.
I agree. They don't. They went over.
They're charging me. They're overcharging. I really think they're overcharging. If it was $40 book, I'd be on top. So a $45 book, I'd be a little iffy. $50. I know that's a $5 change, but
$50. It's a $10 change over where you would be happy.
Yeah, but $50, that means I can go to a movie five times. And I know this is stupid, but that's also like 7 months of Netflix.
That's true.
$50 is two people eating a decent meal at Chili's. A really good meal at Chili's.
Alcohol.
Yeah. $50 is eating a really good sushi meal for two people.
It's sushi, wow. So I'll take your word for it. You're not wrong. I mean, it is too expensive. Originally they said 70. They would have lost their shirts on this.
I want to touch real quick on Horde of the Dragon.
Because we promised we would.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's 30.
It's 30. Yeah, $29.95.
So I don't think the adventure here is bad. I like it. They've got lots of art, inappropriate art in my opinion. In this case, like they give you scenes and they give you lots of maps. I like this art. What I don't like is there's a lack of monsters in there, and I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
There's a lack of monsters in the Monster Manual. The Player's Handbook, we're going to have to wait six weeks from the official release until Monster Manual comes out. I don't like any of that. It's disappointing.
It is.
I don't care for it. But
it's weird that it's hardbound.
No, it isn't. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
It's part of a three-part series, I think.
Right.
They're doing that to make that one important.
Okay.
That's their big push for the next year.
Okay. Well, I found it weird that it's hardbound. The pages inside are not glossy. They're just matte. They're actually gritty.
Yeah.
To the touch.
I kind of like it, actually. It makes it feel more sturdy in the tree.
I don't need that for my book.
That's fair.
It's, to me, it's off-putting because I was holding the Player's Handbook, and it's all nice and shiny, and then I touched another D&D book, and it's not.
Yeah. It's also
inside in the pages.
Well, no,
it's weird. It doesn't
94 pages.
Yeah,
$30 again. I think we can gouge
a little bit.
No, a little bit. It's a third of the number of pages of Player's Handbook,
and
for more than a third of the price.
Math is failing me because it's almost 3 in the morning.
Well, $20 would be a third of 60.
There you go.
So you're paying two or three fifths the price.
There you go.
For whatever. The math is bad. I can't do math right now either. My point is, I really don't. I like both of them.
Right.
I don't know that I want to play this edition for several reasons. Well, honestly, you know what my biggest reason for not wanting to play this edition? Two. I don't like crowdsourced stuff like this. I think that Wizards is going to put something out, and they need to put their full weight behind it and not wait 2.5 years. It was 2.5 years that we waited between the last book of 4th edition till now. We waited 2.5-ish years with nothing. Number two, I should not have to wait four months to get all three of my core books. 4 months to get my three core books.
That's terrible.
So those are the two reasons that until February, this game is not worth playing.
Sure. Fate was designed the exact same way.
Yeah.
You,
now, how much do I have to pay for Fate?
Whatever you want to pay for Fate.
$24.95 on the books. If I want to pay whatever I want to pay, that's what I pay. I get what you're saying. Fate was designed that way. And you know what Fate isn't doing? They're not gouging me. Fate is saying, you know what, you guys helped us make this, so here's the book.
Yeah.
If all the playtesters got a 10% discount or a $10 discount, I'd shut right up because they're being paid.
What's 10% discount? Well,
No, they're still being paid. As far as I'm concerned, $5 is $5. If they handed every one of those playtesters $1, they'd be paid. They didn't hand anybody anything. Scott is raising his hands, and he's been so quiet by sleeping through most of this. So come on over here.
I'll just counter the, while Scott moves over to the table, sure. I'll just counter the unpaid workers thing in that nobody was forced to do this. It was, you chose to do it. It was for fun. I never actually got to play the playtest material because Matt here refused to even look at it.
No, and, am I your only friend?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
This circle is pretty much it. Yeah, so
no. Can I take 2 points that Matt? Hi to everybody. This is Scott. Can I take 2 points that Matt, or a point that Matt is making, a point that you made, and try to meld them together?
Sure.
Okay. You got a couple of problems when you run into crowd group crowdsourcing the writing in the way that they did this, because you made the statement. The problem that you do when you, with crowdsourcing, and you see this with Fate of It, is you can't please all the people all the time.
Yeah.
But when you spread it out over the entire group, you really water down the content. Not necessarily the content, but because you're trying to please so many people,
sure,
and you're taking the edge off here and you're taking the edge off here, that it really brings the level of, it's not one man's idea.
Yeah.
It's not, oh, this is the greatest idea in the world. So you've got that in one corner. But you said it earlier. This is the greatest role-playing game of all time.
According to the cover.
According to the cover.
It's on both of them.
It's on both.
It's on both of them. According to the cover, it's on both of them.
Yeah.
And you're certainly paying a premium at 50. I didn't know that was $50.
Yeah.
Okay. I missed that part earlier because you were talking about it, and I was like, oh, okay, you're paying for the name D&D.
Yeah.
You're paying for a premium. You're paying for the greatest role-playing game in the known universe.
Yeah.
It's the name D&D. Well, now, wait a minute. They crowdsourced it. They watered down the product. They smoothed it all out. But yeah, it really, when it's bread and circuses and you're pandering to the masses, you're really bringing the quality down. But you've doubled the price, tripled the price, and you're paying, yeah, and you're paying for, I mean, when you look at the module's $30. Mm-hmm. I'd commit seppuku before I pay that. You've got one end, it's supposed to be the greatest role-playing game of all time,
mm-hmm,
and you're really watering that in. Like, where does that break? No. Those two don't mesh. Mm-hmm. Crowdsourcing for a $50 player handbook that doesn't have monsters in it? When that's they, hard. That's hard.
When it doesn't have too. All the material you need to run this module. Yeah. Go, I mean, it's, yes, it it's the modern age, of, you know, 98% of the people in this country have internet access.
You know what would have been easier? Put all the books at once.
Print it.
Put it in. We're paying $30 for a freaking module. Put in the module.
And I'll guarantee you what they're going to do is they're going to hard back the second one and the third one.
Yeah.
So that at some point, you're going to pay $90 or $100 for the whole box set.
Yeah.
They'll probably hard back all three and then sell the hard the box set for $10 less. That's what they do, or whatever.
That's what they did with the third edition, or with the fourth edition Player's Handbook and Player's Handbook 2.
Yeah.
I bought them for $25 total.
Yeah.
When they were $30 books by themselves.
Yeah. And then, another way to look at this module, this is their year-long adventure.
First
part of the year-long adventure, the Tyranny of Dragons is what the overall arc of
yeah.
thing. This is the Horde of the Dragon Queen that we're looking at here. In when fourth edition came out, they did Year of the Worms. That was all online. The only way you could get it is if you paid for D&D Insider, which costs you $70 a year.
I'm paying $120 a year.
Because you're paying monthly if you paid it all up front, it was $70
a
year.
Okay.
So at the lowest, D&D Insider cost you $70. And that was the only way. If you, granted, once it was done, you could take your $10 for the month. Download it all, but
I would argue that the Indians are way much more.
Oh yeah, no, I can. That's the point I was getting to.
Yeah.
You pay $70 a month, you get the same, effectively the same kind of product,
yeah,
not hardbound, but available in digital format. Plus, you got all the other articles and insider, processes.
I paid $10 a month for the D&D Insider still.
Yeah,
I'll tell you why. Character generator?
Sure.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Even if you don't like the system, I get that. The character generator makes everything easier.
Okay. Well, because you have all those power cards in the book, and you can just go whoop, 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 and
if it wasn't the character generator for 4th, I'd never play it.
The second thing is, the monster compendium, every monster they put out for 4th edition, no matter where they put it out, is in there.
And again, you can take parts of a monster. Like, I need, you know what, I want a worm, but I wanted to do acid damage. They don't have that. Oh, look, here's an acid troll or an acid ooze. I'm going to steal abilities from that and turn it into a worm. And yeah. Fully customizable.
And then I get the articles from Dungeon and the articles from Dragon.
Right.
That
short $10 is just a book.
Well, and honestly, I was paying $6 or $7 for Dungeon and $6 or $7 for Dragon.
$7 a month for Dragon. Yeah.
And then I didn't get a character generator. I didn't get any of this other stuff. Yeah. I had to carry around the books. And I'll tell you, carrying around 3 monster manuals is effing heavy.
Yeah.
All that aside, I'm paying. There's too much of a price on these.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a bad system. I don't care for the system. Maybe that will change with the DMG. Maybe that will change with the Monster Manual. Maybe that'll change with the Player's Handbook 2 that it will inevitably come out, or the other supplemental books. Maybe they'll put out something in the book, then the Eberron Guide or the Faerun Guide that grabs me and says, this is the game you want to play. Right now, you know what the best thing I found in that book was? It was the full page art that I complained about. I like that one piece, and it makes me want to play a Gentleman Fencer. And this system will let me do it. Fourth edition won't without me having to tweak the system a little bit. I'm okay with that, though. Normally, I'm okay with that anyway. This system will let me do it right off the bat. It will let me play a wizard right off the bat. It will let me play a cleric right off the bat. But what it doesn't do is a lot of stuff. Yeah. And I don't know if this is the D&D I want. I don't think this is the greatest RPG in the world. If they told me it's the best sword and sorcery, I'd go, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
They're going to say it's the best RPG, and I'm going to go, no. I will tell you why. Because that is not a role-playing game. That book has 2 columns and a chapter about role-playing. This book right here, and I know this is unfair, this is Call of Cthulhu. Do you know how much this book designates a whole chapter that's bigger than the chapter for backgrounds to insanity?
One aspect of the game.
One small aspect of the game that you hope your characters will never hit. And in ongoing campaigns, you never hit. And there are more one-shot games for Call of Cthulhu than any other game, because that's the way it's built. You play it once and you go, wow, that was terrible. We never want to experience that again. Call of Cthulhu has just that. There's a whole chapter on the books you can read and how they affect your character. There's still spells. There's still monsters. It's still all in here. This is a better role-playing game than that. That's
again,
my argument.
I think you said it earlier. It comes down to the people at the table
and the GM. That's true.
But Call of Cthulhu gives you the horror game. D&D gives you the sword and sorcery game. Honestly, when Cthulhu is involved in anything, it makes it better.
Yes. Well, except for the warlock class, I will argue the day I die that you are asleep for this part. The warlock. One of the packs you can make is with the Great Cthulhu. It's listed in there. That's a hero. It's a hero making a pact with Cthulhu. Catches you off guard and you're like, ooh, that's bad. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. See, so, my takeaway is, what I really think you're running into is the more people you include, the more it waters down the overall message. And I think they tried to take scoops from third ed, scoops from fourth ed,
A sprinkling of second and first.
Absolutely. But the problem you run into is the more people you include, the more opportunity there is. Because if we each sat down and we individually did D&D and we went third edition, let's look at it. Fourth edition, let's look at it. You could individually go, oh, well, that's garbage, and I'm never doing that, and I've always hated that. So let me pull these things out. This would be my perfect. The more people you add to that process, the more opportunity there are. And I'm sorry, lowest common denominator is lowest for a reason. Mm. You run into the opportunity that some things that you would have stricken, that you would have just gone, oh, dear, encumbrance. All right, there's a first edition term that I really don't want to.
Well, that was all the way through third edition.
I know.
But if you chose to use it.
If you chose, that you can go, oh, how many pack mules is that? And you go, okay, that there's an opportunity that enough lowest common denominators out there go, we loved that, and it should be mandatory, not if you want to use it, that something like that is going to crop in. And I don't think that they've done the best from an executive decision to make it the greatest role-playing in the world by going, look, guys, that's just dumb. Make it optional or not at all. But this mandatory encumbrance, like you're not allowed to, you have to check your combat, that in case you get disarmed, now your encumbrance is different, so your speed moves, your speed increases, or, oh, the rogue, hey, he threw a dagger, an assassin threw a dagger, Encumbrance is down, his speed goes up, so he can now... It's like, wait a minute. Okay, stop. That just sounds dumb. But if you put that in front of 1,000 people, enough of them are going to go.
Yeah,
well, gee, I think that's great that it might make the final cut, and that's just going to dilute your product.
Here's my other issue. For new players, 5th edition is also going to be terrible for the first year and a half.
Because they don't have access to everything.
Hi, I want
to
play Dungeons and Dragons. Okay, well, what will be the title in? I guess I'm playing in Forgotten Realms because that's what the base book says.
So, and again, because you don't have all the monsters, you don't even have a significant selection of monsters in the player's handbook. So, I mean, I'll give my final comments real quick. No, maybe we should wrap this up. 5th edition is not what they promised. It's not what's written on the cover. It's not the greatest book ever. 5th edition, D&D Next, is not a significant change. It's a backpedaling. It's a, we're going to use a little bit of this, we're going to use a little bit of that, and nothing new. There's nothing new in here.
There's not significant amounts of new. There are some.
Sure, there's not significant amounts of new.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's not enough in here to count as a new edition. And Wizards of the Coast fell short. Will I play it? Sure. Anytime anybody wants to sit down, I'll run a game tomorrow.
What won't you play, though?
That's a good...
I'm not trying to call you a gaming whore.
You interrupted my sentence. Will I play this game? Yes. Give me 5 to 6 hours of sleep. I'll get up and I'll run a game for you if you want. But I'd also run Call of Cthulhu for you. I'll run Fate for you. I'll fake an Apocalypse World inspired game if you want me to. Because I'll just game, you know, whatever you want me to do. Gaming wise, I can do it. So
it's not bad.
It fell short of the mark.
I think. This is the unofficial attempt to answer Pathfinder.
Yeah. Pathfinder was getting a lot of press.
So here's my official final comment.
Okay.
Don't answer Pathfinder. You're wasting your time.
Agreed.
Your Dungeons and Flipping Dragons. You should be leading the standard. You should be leading the industry. You should be the thing that everybody goes, oh yeah, did you ever play this thing first? And for a lot of people, that's still the question. But you're losing ground, and you've been losing ground since you put out 4th edition. I still think it's a fine game.
Since they sold Pathfinder.
Yeah. But you have clearly lost your ability to lead. Do something different that works and works for people. This isn't it. This is a response to Pathfinder, and you're failing.
And I would like to addendum that comment.
And
don't charge me like you're making the newest, greatest, best thing ever.
When
you're giving out an answer to Pathfinder.
Yeah.
Pathfinder doesn't have to be answered. It needs to be bested.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I agree.
And that's not this.
Well, and if they did that, they could charge me that. Because that's $80 worth of books right there.
And still not all the material you need to run it. Go find it.
Right, and if I press down real hard on there, it might be the thickness of the original Monster Manual.
Like I said, I'll play it. I wanted to see it. I don't know if I would pay for it, but I probably will. Assuming we don't get more review copies.
No, we'll still be getting a review copy, so hopefully they won't listen to this podcast. No, even if they listen to this podcast, I'm still a fan of Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah.
Even if they... You could say some of the stuff they put out in 4th edition was terrible. Like, Essentials was kind of rough. I'm still a fan. They're still getting $10 a month out of me. They're getting $120 a year, for God's sake.
Well, and I still think it was a constructive criticism. Where it, I mean, I don't think anything you've said here has been D&D or Wizards of the Coast. No.
Because again, it comes down to they fell short. Try again. I'll be there. When you come out with another attempt, I will check it out.
All right.
Oh, man.
How many people in this room can say, well, what was the first role-playing game you ever played? D&D.
Yeah.
King's Quest.
Okay. Pen and paper.
D&D.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
All right. Well, I think that'll do us tonight for Masks. God bless. For the Nerds Domain podcast, I am tired. You can find us on Facebook and on Twitter. And you can buy our shirts over at /loot. Come over to the website and read lots of reviews.
This has been a production of the Omega Nerds Network, the network where it's on.